Sunday, April 21st, 1963. On Tuesday afternoon, April 16th, Don Juan and I went to the hills where his datura plants are. He asked me to leave him alone there and wait for him in the car. He returned nearly 3 hours later, carrying a package wrapped in a red cloth. As we started to drive back to his house, he pointed to the bundle and said it was his last gift for me. I asked if he meant he was not going to teach me anymore. He explained that he was referring to the fact that I had a plant fully mature and would no longer need his plants. Late in the afternoon, we sat in his room, and Don Juan began to demonstrate the preparation of the second portion of the devil's weed with the same meticulous attention and reverence that had characterized his first teaching. In a very exacting yet somehow rhythmic manner, the root, seeds, and live grain weevils were prepared. The procedure, which took many hours and was often accompanied by ritual chants, yielded a small amount of liquid and an unguent paste. The paste was to be applied to the temples on this occasion, and special care was to be taken to avoid the forehead. The most important and most unsettling aspect of the teaching of the second portion was the use, or more properly, the collaboration of two lizards in the sorcery. The sudden appearance of these two in the hands of Don Juan, one with eyes sewn shut, the other with her mouth similarly prepared, produced in me anxiety to the point of revulsion. The real mystery was the lizards, he said. They were to be befriended and revered as divinatory intermediaries. When the preparations were complete, Don Juan gave me a small amount of yellowish liquid to drink and led me to a rocky area near his house. He pointed to a large rock and told me to sit in front of it as if it were my datura plant. "I will leave you alone," he said, and walked away. It was almost dark by then. I thought of Don Juan's words, "The twilight, there's the crack between the worlds." After a long hesitation, I began to follow the steps prescribed. The paste, though it looked like oatmeal, did not feel like oatmeal. It was very smooth and cold. The paste had dried up and scaled off my temples. I was about to rub some more of it on when I realized I was sitting on my heels in Japanese fashion. I had been sitting cross-legged and did not recall changing positions. It took some time to realize fully that I was sitting on the floor in a sort of cloister with high arches. I thought they were brick arches, but upon examining them I saw they were stone. This transition was very difficult. It came so suddenly that I was not ready to follow. My perception of the elements of the vision was diffused as if I were dreaming, yet the components did not change. They remained steady, and I could stop alongside any one of them and actually examine it. The vision was not so clear or so real as one induced by peyote. It had a misty character, an intensely pleasing pastel quality. I wondered whether I could get up or not, and the next thing I noticed was that I had moved. I was at the top of a stairway. And H, a friend of mine, was standing at the bottom. Her eyes were feverish. There was a mad glare in them. She laughed aloud and with such intensity that she was terrifying. She began coming up the stairs. I wanted to run away or take cover because she'd been off her rocker once. That was the thought that came to my mind. I hid behind a column and she went by me without looking. "She's going on a long trip now," was another thought that occurred to me then. And finally, the last thought I remembered was, "She laughs every time she's ready to crack up." Suddenly the scene became very clear. It was no longer like a dream. It was like an ordinary scene, but I seemed to be looking at it through window glass. I tried to touch a column, but all I sensed was that I couldn't move. Yet I knew I could stay as long as I wanted, viewing the scene. I was in it, and yet I was not part of it. I experienced a barrage of rational thoughts and arguments. I was, so far as I could judge, in an ordinary state of sober consciousness. Every element belonged in the realm of my normal processes, and yet I knew it was not an ordinary state. The scene changed abruptly. It was nighttime. I was in the hall of a building. The darkness inside the building made me aware that in the earlier scene the sunlight had been beautifully clear, yet it had been so commonplace that I did not notice it at the time. As I looked further into the new vision, I saw a young man coming out of a room carrying a large knapsack on his shoulders. I didn't know who he was, although I had seen him once or twice. He walked by me and went down the stairs. By then I had forgotten my apprehension, my rational dilemmas. "Who's that guy?" I thought. "Why did I see him?" The scene changed again, and I was watching the young man deface books. He glued some of the pages together, erased markings, and so on. Then I saw him arranging the books neatly in a wooden crate. There was a pile of crates. They were not in his room, but in a storage place. Other images came to my mind, but they were not clear. The scene became foggy. I had a sensation of spinning. Don Juan shook me by the shoulders, and I woke up. He helped me to stand, and we walked back to his house.